Well, and talking about some of your activities and writing and creativity, but I guess I want to take you back just a little bit, because
sure.
Sarah and I were talking about some of the things she remembers seeing mm-hmm. in the 90s, and we were just talking about the 90s.
Right.
There was a lot going on in Lafayette that I feel is a part of what we're seeing the results of right now in Lafayette.
I think so. Absolutely.
The students who were with you at UL mm-hmm. in the mid-90s, not only in theater but in art, it feels like there was this percolation going on at that time.
I think so. And a lot of them are now back, which I think is probably part of that. There was during that sort of late 90s, early 2000s time, there was a really incredible group of talented young people making theater, and we were very fortunate to have a lot of spaces and people around town to give us the opportunity to create freely, which I think is part of what makes that this sort of like renaissance moment happen, when there are a lot of opportunities to work without limitation. Now they're all back. I'm doing the show with two people I went to school with, and it's a lovely time.
Yeah, when you say that, able to work without limitation mm-hmm. and be free, there's something about that laissez-faire quality that was particularly evident in Lafayette in the 80s and 90s.
Yes. Yeah, it felt like Lafayette Community Theater was still open at the time, and they were giving us some freedom to choose shows that we wanted to do and play around. AOC, the old AOC building, gave us that sort of lobby space, and we could transform it into a 50-seat space in sort of any configuration we wanted. And UL was wonderful about giving – UL produced Guernica, which my very first play was a very brave thing for a university to throw a lot of money behind and the resources of the department to do. And I think it made us all feel that anything was possible theatrically, mm-hmm. and we could dream up our own shows and do challenging material, and I think it's paid off for a lot of us.
Yeah, and I was when Katie and Sarah were here recording this morning, we were talking about their fundraiser for Hair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember going to see Hair with my children.
I was in
the mid 90s.
I was in that show.
That was a pretty amazing show.
I
was describing it to someone, and their jaw just about hit the floor when mm-hmm. I said what all was in the production.
Yeah, we had a van on stage. Van drove on stage, that was a really exciting production and a lot of fun. We had a great time.
It was. I think it transformed a lot of lives, the actors who were in there. And I remember some of them working in some of those early companies that we had in mm-hmm. around here, Daystar with Kevin.
That was – yes. I worked with them quite a bit. We did 12th Night and several other shows out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. So there was a lot going on in the 90s.
Yes.
Things happening maybe under the radar, or that critical mass hadn't arrived yet. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of freedom, as you say.
Absolutely.
A lot of very talented students and mentors.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of the people who were in positions to give us opportunities had been a part of the last time that happened during the Eavesdrop Theater time, and I think the
70s.
And mm-hmm. so those are the people who were running spaces and opening the doors for those of us who were just coming up. And I think we're now in that position to do it for younger groups now, that we're doing that. Those of us who had those doors opened are now doing that ourselves, and for ourselves too, because we're still out there pounding the pavement and making things.
That's right. So there is that generational mm-hmm. sort of pendulum that's happening
now as well. I've had several conversations mm-hmm. saying that there's something in the air right now though that just mm-hmm. seems really exciting and possible, which is wonderful.
And you've come back after being away for a little time,
mm-hmm. a year and a half
in Philadelphia, and I have to say, the response, when you were talking about mentors and that pendulum swinging and something in the air, the response I've heard people make when someone says, Cody Daigh is coming back.
it's kind of embarrassing.
Well, it shouldn't be embarrassing, but substitute your name for anyone else in your group people writing, people who've been in theater around here for a couple decades mm-hmm. now, and they are excited about being a part of what a part of your talent, your creativity that has been honed in Lafayette mm-hmm. over and in other places. Obviously,
you've
traveled, but given that freedom and that the mentoring that you received
Absolutely.
In the 90s, they're very excited to have you back in this mix.
Well, and I'm happy. I mean, it's been a wonderful month just being back. It's been more – I've done more work in the past month than I did pretty much the whole year that I was in Philadelphia working. So it's been – there's something special here. Right. I'm glad to be back and a part of it.
Right. Well, for those people who may not have heard Everything Yesterday with Cheryl, mm-hmm. let's just recap your work.
Sure.
Maybe chronologically, you mentioned Guernica, which you wrote
yes.
as a student here.
Yes. That was in 97. I think we produced that. It was my first play. And Dr. Stephen Taft, who was the department head at the time, produced the show on the main stage, which was a wonderful – I won a Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival Award, and it was a great experience for everybody involved. Yeah.
And what inspired you to write that play?
Oh, gosh. I don't really think about a first play.
What was it? An assignment?
No, I had I'd taken a Western civilizations class in high school where we had there was a sort of an art survey section, and Picasso's Guernica was part of that class, and we spent some time discussing it and its importance. And there was something about that play that just felt inherently theatrical and could be sort of a jumping off point for a show. And I think the sort of 18-year-old playwright was interested in. Sort of what does it take to be a great artist? How do you overcome your fears and your doubts and insecurities about making work? And that's really what the play is about. And so out came this play mm-hmm. that I gave to Dr. Taft and said, I don't know if this is any good here. Would you tell me what you think? And he wanted to produce it. And it was the best thing that anyone has ever done for me.
Well, and again, how many major universities in this country can an 18-year-old write a play and the head of the department produces it?
And that's one of the great things about a program like UL was at the time and other similar programs. When you're not in an overly large, incredibly competitive program, you can do the crazy thing for the kid who's never written a play before and throw all the resources behind it and branch out to other departments in the university, and everyone gets behind it. And so mm-hmm. it was a lucky thing.
Well, and so obviously it all worked out well and it was successful
yes.
and people responded very, very well to it, even remembering to this day. If you say Guernica I saw that.
You were the two.
That's right. Absolutely. I remember seeing mm-hmm. it as well and just stunned that something so edgy, experimental, and that had been written by a student was produced
yeah,
here.
It was a great it opened – it was the thing that made me believe that it was possible for me to do. That, okay, so yes, I can in fact – this is a possible thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're a kid growing up in sort of Scott – I grew up in Scott, Louisiana. The notion of being a playwright is not one that comes readily to you, that you think it's possible. And so that was a great moment.
Some of our listeners may have seen William and Judith,
yeah.
Your play. We'll talk about it in just a moment. But there is a scene in there where you're describing, and maybe it's Judith who's talking about their childhood and mm-hmm. writing together and just writing. Mm-hmm. Is that at all from your childhood? Did you write? Did you make up little scenes?
No, I did. Mm-hmm. I didn't have an older sibling. I have a younger brother. And I started writing little stories and things when I was six. So I'd been writing for a very long time. I had a wonderful fifth grade teacher, Miss Gail James, who was the first person to say, "Hey, this thing that you're doing, this is a real thing. You could be a writer." And that sort of identity stuck with me. Mm-hmm. But I was always making up. We would do sort of plays and make movies with the neighborhood kids in the summer, and I'd sort of orchestrate all the stories, and we'd run around the yard and play act these ridiculous things, and it was great fun. Yeah.
So that was in your childhood DNA.
Yes, absolutely.
Creating, writing, giving people dialogue,
mm-hmm.
moving
yes.
them around. That was already a part of
yes.
you.
Yes. Done much less artistically and beautifully than I do today, I think.
But it gave you a great
yeah,
pleasure.
It was a great place. Yes, absolutely.
Right. And then just compounded with the success of Guernica mm-hmm. that really sealed it in you, that this is not only a pleasure, but a potential career.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happened after Guernica? What did you write after that?
There was a big period of time where I didn't really write a lot. I wrote a few small things, but none of them ever really was in a position to be produced. At the time, I didn't really know the process for getting your plays out into the world. Those resources weren't really readily available to me here. So we started theater, Ovation Theater Works. A couple of friends and I started a theater company where we produced our own, produced other people's work. And we did that for a couple of years. And I spent a lot of time on the producing side. And then around 2005 or so, I really sort of recommitted to writing plays. And I wrote a play called Providence, which ended up having a nice little life of its own. And educated myself more on submission and how to get plays out into the world. And started to see some response to that.
Well, do you think that time you spent mostly acting and producing really helped hone your writing skills?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I know there's a quote, I guess I read in the interview on your website, where you're being interviewed, mm-hmm. and there's a question about acting, and you say that, you know, acting is a craft until you really give of yourself, and then it becomes an art.
Yes. I believe that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So that time you spent actually acting and participating in theater gave you perhaps a different perspective on writing.
I think taking the time to sort of experience theater from all different sides and experience a script from all different angles as a producer, a director, an actor, and all, a designer sometimes. That was it really teaches you everything you need to know when you sit down to write the play yourself. You know how everyone else will then approach your work, and you can create something that best tells everyone what you need them to do but gives them the freedom to do it. And so that was incredibly helpful. Yeah.
And did you find that because that's an interesting idea that acting can be a craft, but what elevates it to an art? As a director, do you find that understanding that has helped you elicit that from your actors to give them a sense of how to go beyond craft and into art?
I think so. I think that's the thing that changed in my work after I had spent that time. My friend Duncan, when I started writing Providence and those plays, said, this is exciting because your plays have heart now that they didn't have before. And I think that was just sort of after a period of sort of really understanding who I was as a person and what I wanted out of what I did and being unafraid to express that through your work. And then the heart comes out. And I think it's I started writing acceptably, I think, at that point. Yeah.
Well, going beyond just the craft, just the mechanics of it.
Certainly. I think as a young playwrights tend to write ideas. They have this idea, this thing they want to say. And so the play becomes a bunch of people walking around on stage saying the thing that the playwright wants to say. But real great theater is people behaving and sort of people experiencing something and an audience experiencing what those characters on stage are experiencing as well, and finding something true about the human condition instead of just a big idea.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in or perhaps didn't catch it right at the beginning, my guest is Cody Daigh, a playwright who is about to open his latest play, 18 Victoria, that will be at Theater 810 in downtown Lafayette. It will run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings this weekend only. Mm-hmm. So you need to get your tickets. You can't just wait and
right.
say, oh, I'm going to go next weekend.
Small house. So.
That's right. And only about 50 seats. And we're talking a bit about his background and kind of leading up to what this foment is here in Lafayette, that your play is just a part mm-hmm. of everything going on right now, but that your generation was very much a part of what made this possible in Lafayette right now.
Well, I think this is this great moment for original work too. There was a time when doing an original play was an unheard of thing. When Guernica was done, nobody had done – playwrights didn't live here. And and now there's so much original work being created here, which I think is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that is because of examples like yours, or is it just easier with technology to exchange plays?
Oh, no, I don't want to take credit for the original work, but I think having the door open for to know that that a local play can get produced, and there is a system in which you can write a play and then produce it. Certainly, I think that's helpful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and not only just produce it here, but learning how to get it out into the world
sure.
and to contact other theater companies. And,
yeah.
and you've been quite successful at that.
I've been And of course, luck plays into it. You just sort of meet the right people at the right time, and there's a wonderful kismet that happens, and then work happens, which is mm-hmm. even more wonderful.
Well, let's get you through your works up until 18 Victoria. You mentioned Providence, mm-hmm. which came after that period
yes.
where you were just acting.
Yes.
What came next?
After Providence was produced off Broadway by a company in New York in 2007, I did another show with that company in New York as well, called A Home Across the Ocean, which was in 2010, and that was a very successful show. And then the next big show was William and Judith, and I wrote that in 2011. It was a commission by Playhouse Tulsa. a company that I have a longstanding now relationship with. And I followed – that show has been the prominent show that I've dealt with in the last like year and a half or 2 years.
Right. And again, that's another play that people seem – like the way that Guernica was, people remember seeing it and it touched them
it's,
on so many levels.
It seems – and it's happened everywhere the play has gone. The play's received had its world premiere in Tulsa in 2012. It was just recently produced in North Carolina and audiences respond to it in the same way they did here, which was very enthusiastically and with a really open hearts and with a lot of excitement. And that has been very, very satisfying overall.
Well, and I guess I saw it when it was produced here at Theater 810. And so it's sometimes hard to separate the writing from the actors when obviously there was incredible heart in that play and the actors responded to that with their hearts.
Yes.
But it's touching people elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And tell us about the writing of that. How do you feel you infused that play? What inspired you aside from just the story?
That play is a really interesting – I originally had that idea when I was here as a student. That was going to be the follow-up play to Guernica. The original attempt at William and Judith was in college, and it was the play I started writing after Guernica was done. But I wasn't the right playwright for it. I wasn't ready to write it. So it's been filed in the back of my head for a very long time. And Playhouse Tulsa, I was an actor in a show for them. And they said, listen, if you have a play, we would love to do a reading of it if you have something new that hasn't been done. And I thought, well, let me try that William and Judith play. Let me try that Shakespeare play. See how that – I'll give that a go. And it was kind of this wonderful moment of sort of figuring the play out and having it speak to you. And I think a large part of that play is sort of the fear of what comes next for a creative person, that once you have created things that are successful, then how do you make the next thing when there's expectation? And I'm not that I think there's a great demand for my work, but I think I feel it. I feel the pressure myself to make the next thing and hope that it's good. And that animated that play, I think.
Well, and to animate it with the figures, with William Shakespeare and his sister, it becomes not just some kind of personal, localized fear. You've universalized it.
Yeah. And you know, being inspired, it's inspired by a passage from Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own and sort of the questions of how does being an artist inform your identity and how important is it and what we do to keep our artistic identity, the links that we'll go and all of those things.
You know, but it's kind of interesting, even when a play is about that, even when a story is about that, the writer, if there's something inherently universal about it affects us on other levels. You know, those of us who are not writers watching it don't necessarily put ourselves in the place as writers, but it says something about the human condition as well, about fear of failure.
Well, I feel like that's part of like that happens if you've done the right amount of risk when you sit down to write it, when you really just nakedly tell your truth through your characters and through the story, then everyone else can come to it with the same sort of openness as well. And I really love those characters and love that play.
Well, so. I'm sure there are many people who hope it's reprised often here in this
area. I hope so too.
Well, so after William and Judith, what did you write?
18 Victoria is the
all
next.
Right,
I haven't.
Right.
Yeah, I. William
so
and
this
Judith
is your Tempest now.
Yeah, I hope not. That's the last one. William and Judith was a really a difficult process. I wrote the play. We did a reading. Then we spent a year sort of readying it for the Playhouse's original production, and then I moved. So I really haven't. I've done some adaptations in other things, but I haven't written a full length play of my own, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I got home about a month ago and literally just opened a file on my computer and started writing this play. And it was about a week and a half and it was done. And We're diving in.
All right, well,
we're gonna dive in.
Let's talk about this play for just a moment, because I have to say every time I look at the title, I think it's like a London metro stop, subway stop.
Yeah,
and I have to remember, no, this is science fiction. Why science fiction? That's really not a part of any of your other plays, is it?
No. Well, probably the last 6 months I've become a little bit of obsessed with space documentaries. So I've watched Cosmos and There's a Discovery Channel called How the Universe Works, a series, and I've just sort of watched them, and I find them fascinating mm-hmm. and enthralling, that the universe is this enormous, complicated, terribly frightening place. I mean, mm-hmm. really, all it takes is one little space rock to hit your planet and everything's done. And it won't make very much difference in the grand scheme of the universe at all. We're just this little speck in an infinite space. And mm-hmm. there's something just really compelling about that. And it's been in the back of my head
for a while. Well, as you said, there's something in the air. You know, last year, Nathan Gabriel produced his Kaleidoscope mm-hmm. Both as a radio drama and also produced it downtown mm-hmm. at Theater 810. And it has certain elements of that same fear that you're talking about the grand, the hugeness of space, and a very different kind of story.
Yeah. Well, I will say I saw that production and I loved it. Mm-hmm. I thought Kaleidoscope was one of the coolest things I've seen here, and its brevity and its impact. I thought it was like lovely, mm-hmm. and everyone's really into science fiction now. Science fiction has really sort of become taken on a mainstream mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Presence that it didn't have before. It's not just for nerds anymore, which is wonderful, and yeah.
Well, maybe allowing us to transform that, the more we know about the universe, the more complex mm-hmm. and bigger it seems, and it allows us to sublimate that, you know, with art, with plays, with stories, with movies.
And there feels – in writing this play, it felt like there was when you have such a grand canvas of ideas to work from, and sort of these ideas of how the universe works and what can happen in it, it's such a great canvas to place a really personal – family story on, that those two things, although contrasting in their size, are really compatible and sit nicely together in a play.
So how do you structure this? 18 Victoria is the name mm-hmm. of the...
Is the name of the asteroid.
The asteroid,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually that's actually the naming system. There's a series of names. So Victoria is one of the many names that an asteroid can have, and there's a number that precedes them.
Kind of like hurricanes.
Something like that, yeah.
So it's kind of a space hurricane.
Yes,
something coming,
yes.
A disaster. So just sketch out, without giving it away,
sure.
And I don't know that you really can. I don't know if there's a plot in that same sense.
Ish.
These tend to be more... monologues?
Yes, sort of. Essentially, mm-hmm. it's three sets of interlocking monologues that are punctuated with scenes. The characters, only in the final scene do two characters actually ever share the same real space in the world. Otherwise, they're either telling the audience their side of the story or communicating through text messages or phone calls, because a lot of the play is about disconnection, and that seemed to be an interesting way to explore that between people, where we're hearing over – in the course of the play, we hear the same story from each of the three siblings' points of view from their past mm-hmm. At different points in the story.
Well, tell us who the actors are and
sure.
their characters.
It's I'm in the show. I'm playing Ben, who's the youngest of the three siblings. Kara Hayden, who is a local actor, she's also been a director and has produced a bit, plays Catherine, our sister. And John Snyder, who was in New York for a while. I went to school with him. He was in Guernica with me. He plays the oldest brother, Stephen, and there are three siblings whose father has recently passed away, and they've had a really turbulent childhood. Their relationship is really unsatisfying. They don't communicate. Stephen has been away for 20 years and has never come home, and the play explores their attempts to come back together and also why the family has fallen into the disrepair, I guess, that it's in.
What does that do to you as a playwright? I mean, when a lot of people think of plays, they think of the very classic, there's constant dialogue between mm-hmm. people. What does that do to you as a playwright and your approach to that story to leave that kind of classic dialogue and work in this form?
I think what was really interesting about this play was the ability to, in monologues with sort of – you have three unreliable narrators to some degree because they're all telling their version of the story. And the truth is somewhere in between. So it was this wonderful discovery of what the truth was somehow, and having the interesting challenge of writing a moment from three different perspectives and three different experiences, with each of the characters knowing something a little different about the past. My character knows the least about what really happened. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun way to write. The monologues are all written in blank verse, where they're not sort of speeches across the page. They're written as sort of blank verse poems.
And I find that interesting because yesterday, as I was listening, you said you don't understand writing poetry, don't understand fiction novels.
Well,
but in this, what you're doing here for this play is very much like literature, fiction, kind of an extended
narrative. Maybe it's my like feeble attempt to try it. Yeah. Well, and the writing of in the verse is for me, it's a way to tell the actors where to take the pauses and to understand the rhythms of a speech instead of just this like page. You get a page with just this constant stream of things. It has a physical shape, and you can see where the pauses are and understand the rhythms of a complicated 5-page speech in an easier way.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Now, were you inspired by – did you write it for these people? These
I did.
Actors?
It was written originally – when I got home, I booked this weekend in the theater, and we were going to do this other project that I have in my head, and then this play took over, and I thought, okay, I'll write this for John and Kara and Ida Du. And their voices come through very strongly in the two characters. They're a joy to write for. They nail it. Really, it's wonderful.
So they're just going to have to be a traveling troupe, and they're always going to have to perform this play.
We're always going to do this play together. Yeah, we're set to go.
Yeah. If you have just tuned in, my guest is playwright Cody Daigh. His latest play is 18 Victoria, and it will open tomorrow evening at Theater 810 in downtown Lafayette. There are 3 performances only, and so you would suggest that people reserve their tickets.
Absolutely.
Now.
It's a very limited run. It's just sort of a test for us. We're just trying the show out. So, come and join us.
Yeah. You know, Cody, it's kind of interesting alongside of all this fervor and foment in the world of theater in our community in this area, there's also equally a passionate movement towards film.
Mm-hmm.
So many young people going into the moving image arts program here at the university and so many films being made. Do you ever feel like telling your story in film? Because, you know, when you think about your childhood and ordering people around, making them move around, giving them scenes, I mean, it's not much difference between what a movie director is doing and a playwright really at some point. And then there begins to be this divergence. What pleases you more about writing for stage rather than the thought perhaps of film?
I think it's just the form that my gut understands. I understand writing a play, and I can sort of take a story and I see how it works on the stage and I see how it fits into the constraints of the stage. I just understand it. I don't understand film as well. I'm told that some of the plays would work well as film. Would work well on film. I wouldn't know how to do it. That wouldn't make sense to me.
Well, obviously, some great American plays have been turned into film.
And if anybody would like to, please, I'm very
I'm
open to it.
Looking for that next connection and that next step.
I'm totally open to it.
That's right, William and Judith, Guernica.
Sure, Providence would be a great movie.
Well, we'll look forward to that next step as well, and that conflagration of when the playwrights meet the filmmakers here in this community. Well, Cody, thanks for giving us all so much pleasure and being
you.
A part of this movement that's becoming just this very exciting atmosphere in South Louisiana. And I know a lot of people looking forward to seeing 18 Victoria and whatever it is that you write next. You mentioned you have another project in your head.
Oh, yeah, always something.
That's
There's
right.
always something.
Well, you're working with young people this summer.
Yes.
And again, being a mentor and hopefully encouraging those young people who like to.
And they're writing their own plays, and that's so who knows? Maybe we'll get another Guernica out of some kid this summer.
Well, we'll look forward to that and look forward to having you back with your next production. If anybody would like tickets for 18 Victoria, you can call the theater or there's an Eventbrite site as where you can order tickets.
That's correct, yes.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Cody. We appreciate it, and we're so glad you're back.
Well, thanks.